Everybody, welcome to Weir's Barbecue here on 101.9 FM CITR Radio, Vancouver, British Columbia, every Tuesday from 4:30 to 6 p.m. Lots to get into on the show today, and to start things off, we have with us on the line, assistant coach for the UBC Thunderbird men's basketball team, Vern Knopp. Coach, how we doing, Vern? Big weekend for, well, a good weekend for you guys. You played Fraser Valley a couple games up in Abbotsford, swept them both games, not really threatened in either contest. You're 17-2. Fraser Valley drops to 7-12. You expect to blow these guys out in two games, and you did it.
Yeah, there are two games we definitely thought on our schedule that we should win quite handily. You never want to take teams lightly. They do have some young talent, but I think the biggest key right now is that they're just too young right now to compete at the level that we're at right now, but they're definitely a team to watch for the future.
And, you know, just break it down, this Fraser Valley team, because you look at their record, Vern, and they're not doing that bad. They are 7-12, and the Canada West Pacific Division is definitely the strongest division in the conference this year. You're 17-2. Vic and Trinity are 14-5. SFU's 11-8. So 7-12 for Fraser Valley, that's not that bad, is it?
Yeah, on the outside, looking in, it's not that bad. But when you really look at their wins, when you go in-depth with them, all their wins have come against teams that are below 500.
Ah.
So in some senses, they're where they are in the standings, because that's where they deserve to be. Ultimately, they want to take that next step. They got to be able to compete with the teams that are above 500, and that's basically SFU, Trinity, ourselves, and Vic. So, but like I said, they're going to be a tough team, and they're probably another year or two away as well. I mean, this year they're missing two of their best players, so they get them back next year. And all those young first-year and second-year players are a year older, so they'll definitely be a team to be reckoned with in the future.
And for your team, Vern, this weekend, Friday, definitely the easier matchup, 4-14 Lethbridge. But then you've got the big one on Saturday, a 15-3 Calgary Dinos team coming in here. you will still have first place in the Canada West regular season championship, even if you lose that game, just for the fact that you have one more win, but you'll have played one more game, but you play one more game than Calgary this season. Doesn't matter, though. This is a big game for you guys. Could be a Canada West final preview for all we know, but got to ask you, I'm sure you've seen the tape. Calgary last weekend lost at home to red-hot Trinity Western. What did you see in the Calgary loss to Trinity Western on the weekend?
I think it might have been, you know, I mean, Trinity played extremely well, especially not having Jacob Dirks in the lineup. Obviously, with them beating us earlier in the year, they haven't dropped the game in the new year, so you can definitely make an argument that they're not only the hottest team in Canada West, but they're also the hottest team in Canada. With that said, I think Calgary might have been caught looking a little ahead to our matchup. I mean, I would think, like us, Calgary's been circled on our schedule all year long. It's a game the guys have been looking forward to, and I think Calgary in some ways might have been looking ahead, so I think that might have factored into a bit of them getting upset last week.
Yeah, this is a game, Calgary, that you have had circled on your calendar since the start of the year. We're going to see them here, I'm certain, in the Canada West Final Four. Don't know how they'll do in that tournament, but I think we're definitely going to see them here. You played them twice last year. They beat you in the regular season game in Calgary. You beat them in the one that mattered in the Canada West Final Four semifinal, also in Calgary. I thought your best game of the year last season that I saw. Break it down. The Beckering brothers, Robbie Sahota. This is a pretty athletic Calgary team, isn't it?
Yeah, they're one of the more athletic and big teams in the country. It's definitely a team that not only are they big, but they come out and they play very physical as well. And with that said, you know, they do have a lot of talent. They have some guys that can shoot the ball, and they're real big and aggressive on the boards as well. So we definitely have our work cut out for us this weekend.
And for your team right now, Vern, how are you guys looking at it? Because you've got the Lethbridge game, and then the following on the Friday, you play this big Calgary game on the Saturday, and then next weekend, not the hardest way to finish out the regular season, hosting Fraser Valley and the 2-17 Thompson Rivers. So as far as getting set for the playoffs, this is the game on Saturday where you're going to have some real competition. How are you looking at this Saturday game as head coaches? Because the other three games, I mean, you know, the teams you're playing have a combined 13 wins versus 43 losses. So those are your other three matchups. But then you're playing the 15-3 Calgary on the Saturday. How are you guys looking at this game?
You know, as big as the game is on Saturday, it's really we can't really afford to look ahead of Lethbridge. Yeah, they only have four wins on the year, but they're a team that really, you know, they know their season's out, so they don't really have, you know, they can come out and play really loose, and there's no pressure on them whatsoever. And we'd be making a huge mistake if we just overlook them and just look forward to Calgary. We really need to look at it as winning both games this weekend. Because if we do win both games this weekend, then we basically clinch first place in BC. And right now, that's our first goal on the season, is to win our division and clinch it this weekend. And then next weekend, we just look to get everybody involved in the games and get everybody healthy for playoffs as well.
Well, if you win the game on Friday or Saturday, or Trinity Western and Victoria lose one, each of them lose a game this weekend, you will clinch the Canada West Pacific Division regular season title. It'll be the fourth year in a row you guys have done that. What kind of accomplishment is that for you guys? And, you know, you have to be satisfied with the way you guys have played in division and in conference this year.
Yeah, you know, looking at the big picture, we are very pleased of where we are right now, and that's been, you know, every year we set our goals as first and foremost winning the BC division, so we have home court through the provincials. The second goal is always to win Canada West, not just the league title, but to win the Final Four, so we get a good seeding in the national championships as well. So, you know, we don't want to get carried away first. The first key is clinching our BC division in Canada West, and hopefully we can do that this weekend.
Yeah, but Vern, to clinch that, you need one win in your last four. If you don't do that, I'll have to say it'll be a pretty disastrous ending for you guys.
Yeah, well, we're not looking at it again. We're not looking at it just to win one game this weekend. We want to continue the role. We just want to, you know, we control our own destiny, and we want to keep it that way through the throughout the playoffs.
And, Vern, got to ask you about this Trinity Western basketball team. They got the big win versus you guys in Langley earlier on in the season, and they are, as you said, a red-hot basketball team right now. What are they at here? 3, 5, 8, 9, 12 wins in a row for Trinity Western. What's made it that this team's been able to turn it around, and got to give them big credit for going into Calgary this weekend without probably the best player in the conference, Jacob Dirksen, and getting a win?
No question. It was a bit of a surprise to see them come out with a big win against against Calgary, but it just goes to show you when you start winning games and get used to winning games every week, that even when you have, you're missing guys because of injury, guys can have that confidence to go in anywhere and play. And, they're a team that early in the year struggled just, with a new coach, a lot of new players coming in. And obviously it took them a while to gel, but now that they have, anytime you can put a guy like Jacob Dirksen in the lineup, it gives you a chance to beat anybody in the country at any day. So they'll definitely be a team to be reckoned with coming to playoffs. But with that said, the playoffs are a whole different, it's a different beast out there when you're in the playoffs.
And tomorrow night, it'll be on the Score, Channel 54. Ottawa and the number two team in the country, Carleton, are going to be playing. You guys are currently the number three team in the country. You going to watch this game? And, what are we looking for in this game tomorrow? I don't know a thing really about these two teams, so what am I looking at when I see these guys play?
Well, it's actually funny that you brought that up. I spoke with Coach Hanson today during practice, and we're going to meet up for dinner and watch the game ourselves together. Probably a few of the other coaches will join us, I'm sure. Really, it's what it's billed to be, that it's the number one and number two team in the country going head to head. They have been the last 5 years pretty much the top two teams most of those years in competing for the top team in Ontario. So it's going to be a really tough battle between the two teams. They Carleton's record speaks for themselves. They've won 5 out of the last 6 championships. It'll probably be a very physical defensive struggle, probably low scoring. So if you're looking to see a game in the 80s and 90s, it's probably not going to happen. You'll probably be seeing more of a game in the 50s and 60s. But if you like tough defense, then that's definitely a game you're going to want to tune in to watch tomorrow.
Because, Vern, got to bring it up, because I know we're not there yet, and there's a whole mountain to climb to get there, but, the National Championship Tournament, you guys have been there 5 of the last 6 years, and the whole story, losing the first round every year 5 of 6. What is it that these teams have done out there in the East that, to get over that hump, you guys are going to have to deliver?
Well, I think the biggest thing foremost is that the competition in Ontario has just been it's so much tougher than, even though Carleton's had an amazing record the last 5-6 years, a couple of years they've gone undefeated, they play so many close games. Like, they don't have a lot of 20-30-point blows. They win a lot of games by 3 and 4 and 5 points. And I think that's been a big difference maker when you come to, when you go to the national championships. You're playing the top 8 teams in the country, and you get a lot of close games. And I think what's hurt us in the past is that we've kind of cruise through BC and even Canada West for the most part fairly easy, with the odd tough game against Calgary or Alberta or Victoria, that I think going to Nationals, that's really hurt us. Not to mention with the Canada West Final Four, we have a week off before Nationals as well, and I think that's kind of hurt us, where Ontario, they play right up until they qualify for Nationals a week before Nationals start, so they kind of have a little more momentum going into those weeks. But that's just kind of the way the schedules are made up, and being out in the West is kind of, that's just, one of the things you have to overcome. And I think that's just the biggest reason they play a lot of close games, and we don't have as many close games on the season.
And, I'm going to be watching, as you said, a real tough defensive battle, and I'm sure you guys are going to be right into it tomorrow. But, you're a team that likes to play the wide-open basketball game, and, maybe this is how Calgary's going to play you. I know if you have to play Victoria in the playoffs, that's how they like to play you. But what does UBC have to do against these really tough defensive teams where you can't play that run-and-gun style that you guys like to do so much?
Like I said in the past, we just worry about what we have to do on the floor. Victoria and Calgary will want to play a little more low-scoring. Just because Victoria knows they can't play an up-tempo game and beat us at our own, that's playing into our strength. But with that said, the last couple of years, our defense has been a lot stronger. And I really think, especially this year, our defense hasn't gotten enough credit for some of the efforts we've put forth. Everybody always just looks at the fact that we're scoring, almost 80 plus points a game, and it's kind of a, you know, everyone's just misinformed. I think it's just they always just see us as a high-octane team. We don't get enough credit for our defense. Obviously, when you're scoring in the 80s, you might be giving up a few more points, especially when you're up against a team like Fraser Valley, you know, 24, 25 points. You're going to have a bit of a letdown. I think that's kind of hurt us a bit statistically. But with that said, I think, you know, I know we're top three in Canada West as far as points against, so I think we're doing a pretty good job of that end ourselves.
Awesome. Vern Knopp, assistant coach, UBC basketball. So, Vern, you got a fun sports weekend this weekend. You got the basketball games Friday and Saturday, and then the Super Bowl on Sunday. I know you're right into that. Where do you watch the games again? You're out in Coquitlam, aren't you?
I go to Port Coquitlam, a place called the Treehouse Pub.
There you go. Who are you liking this weekend, Vern?
You know, everyone's jumping on the Arizona bandwagon, and for that reason, I think Pittsburgh's a better team, and I think they'll win by 10.
Pittsburgh by 10. I love it how between my stat that I like here is either Ben Roethlisberger or Kurt Warner after Sunday's game will have as many Super Bowls as John Elway had in his career, will be at one less than Tom Brady and one more than Peyton Manning and two more than Dan Marino. I like that one.
Yeah, but it's more than just the quarterback, so it's also the defenses. Tom Brady won his Super Bowls with a great defense. I mean, Tom Brady in three Super Bowls, I don't even think was an MVP. I believe it was they had other players step up, and you know, but both teams, a lot of those teams have won it on defense. And as good as Roethlisberger has been for his career, that make no mistake about it, Pittsburgh wins because of their defense.
Okay, but if Kurt Warner and company do pull it off, you can't use that one on him.
Nope, that's you know, there's the exception. Even with John Elway, when they won, as good as their defense was, that was because of John Elway and a great running game in Terrell Davis. But you know, Kurt Warner's guy just has come out of nowhere, and if he wins the Super Bowl, it's you got to put him up there with some of the all-time greats. You don't win two Super Bowls by fluke, so he's obviously had a good career in his own right.
Okay, Vern, give me your Super Bowl MVP pick.
Oh, Super Bowl MVP. I'll go with Willie Parker.
I'm going with Troy Polamalu.
That's a pretty safe bet. He's been he's been unbelievable this year, especially in the playoffs.
All right, I suck. What can I say? Although Willie Parker was big against the Seahawks that one year. He had like a big run.
He was very big. I think they gave the MVP to Hines Ward, if I'm not mistaken.
I remember betting on Willie Parker. We were in Vegas for that Super Bowl, and we were watching it at the strip club Scores. We had like a whole setup and free booze and a buffet and everything going on. And I remember Willie Parker, I had him going like under 80 yards or 70 yards or something
And he had that by halftime, didn't he?
No, he had nothing in the first half, and then he had a huge run in the third quarter that like blew it away. I remember that. Yeah, it sucked.
Again, I'm taking the hint that you're betting Pittsburgh then this weekend?
I'm betting Pittsburgh this weekend.
See, I might have to go opposite then. If I'd have known that, I might have to put some money down in Arizona then.
Yeah.
How your football picks go, so.
Well, I'm actually turning it around in my football pool this year. I finished 6-10 this year.
Oh, that's good. You didn't draft Jamarcus Russell this year?
No, I didn't draft it, but I was a Tom Brady owner. I made a big trade for Brady in the offseason.
That's just to show you your jigs. So what can I say?
But I traded LT for him, so it's looking okay right now. But I did draft in basically, because we're a keeper format, but basically in the 10th round of our 12-team draft, I drafted a backup running back on Houston. Actually, he was a third stringer at the time out of West Virginia called Steve Slayton. So I've got him going for it. So that's really all I have to say.
That's your claim to fame for this year.
Pretty much it. When I break it down that way, it's pretty pathetic, actually. But
it really is, yeah.
And Vern, I'm going to be talking Academy Award nominations today. Have you seen any of the movies that are nominated?
You know what? I haven't. Just with basketball season keeping me busy, I haven't had a chance to go out and see them, so I'm going to have to catch up in the next few weeks.
Okay, I'll give you the movie to see is The Wrestler.
Is The Wrestler? I've heard good things about that, yeah.
Yeah, it's amazing. And another one, actually, didn't get nominated was Gran Torino's terrific.
Oh, really?
The Clint Eastwood one, yeah. That. You don't have to go see Benjamin Button. You can rent that piece of crap.
There you go.
It's okay. It's all right. All right, Vern, thanks for doing this. And hurry up, get through these next 2 weeks and get the playoffs started already.
I hear you. I'm definitely looking forward to the playoffs.
Awesome. Thanks a lot, Vern.
Thank you. Bye.
Okay, that was Vern Knopp, assistant coach, UBC Thunderbird men's basketball. We're going to be talking a lot of Canada West men's basketball. We're going to have Howard Samura of the Vancouver Province on the show in about 20 minutes. And then, of course, our Super Bowl preview, lots of fun stuff. BJ Bass from Nevada, Las Vegas will be with us at 5:30. BJ says he's got a book, and we're going to go through some of it here. He's got a book of 24. 4 pages of prop bets for the Super Bowl. A 24-page prop bet booklet. That's what happens when you live in Las Vegas, I guess. You become a bit of a degenerate gambler, but yeah, good for him. He's the best. He's awesome. Anyways, folks, you're listening to 101.9 FM, CITR Radio, Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada. NHL All-Star Game was on the weekend, and you know what? I don't think I saw a bit of Coach's Corner on the Sunday. Other than that, I don't think I saw any of it. So I'm pretty much the wrong guy to talk NHL All-Star Game with, but man, you know what? This is all I got to say is, God bless baseball, is they have it where the game actually matters as opposed to hockey, where I couldn't give a crap, to be perfectly honest. But nonetheless, yeah, Canucks get back into action tomorrow night versus Nashville. Currently sitting seventh, coming in today, seventh in the Western Conference. And I think a bunch of the teams that are right behind them are playing tonight, so who knows what place they're going to be in by tomorrow. Nonetheless, I think it's like 34 games to go right now for the Canucks. We're not at the point where they have to start turning it on, but it'd be nice. It'd be nice because playoffs are not that far away. A couple, 2-3 weeks from now, they're going to be closing in pretty fast, so it's time to start winning. What I've been really into this week, and if you listen to my show, you know, this is the sport, one of the sports I do truly love, and you know, I absolutely adore this one, is tennis is going on right now, and it's a great time to watch tennis because hockey's sort of in a bit of the doldrums right now. You know, whatever, after All-Star break, it's just all regular season garbage right now, and you might be into that, but you know, football's dying down. I mean, you know, you got the Super Bowl, and other than that, nothing going on. I mean, I'm not that into the NBA, not anymore. Go Grizzlies! But the Australian Open tennis tournament is going on right now, and you know, I'm sort of at the point now where I start to lose sleep because I go to bed at, like, you know, I don't know. I doubt I'll stay up tonight to watch, although I might, you know. Fernando Verdasco plays Joe Wilfred Tsonga tonight. Tsonga lost in the final last year to Rafa Nadal, and Fernando Verdasco just beat Andy Murray, who, along with Roger Federer, was the betting favorite coming into the Australian Open this year. So that should be a fun one to watch. Nadal's the late one, and that's the one that starts at 12:30 in the morning. He's playing Gilles Simon, a Frenchman. I'm going to assume Nadal's going to probably go through Simon and get into the semifinal, where he'll play the winner of Verdasco and Tsonga. But, you know, I can get some rest tonight. However, tomorrow night is like semifinal time. I think Federer is going to be playing Roddick tomorrow night. I'm going to have, I got to figure out what I'm going to do. Anyways, Roger Federer and Rafa Nadal, obviously the two favorites on the men's side of the draw right now. You know, you had Andy Murray and you had Novak Djokovic. Murray lost in the round of 16 to Verdasco. Djokovic had to retire last night playing Andy Roddick. Novak Djokovic, the young Serb, the defending champion. And last night I watched Roger Federer beat, who was the guy he beat last night? Juan Del Potro, an Argentine. 6-3, 6-love, 6-love. Federer, in the round of 16 matchup, was playing Thomas Berdych, I believe was the guy's name. Where the heck was Berdych from? I think he was like a Czech or something like that. Anyways, he was playing him in the round of 16, and Federer was in a heap of trouble playing Berdych. Yeah, he is a Czech. Down 2-0. Federer goes out, wins the third, fourth, and fifth set, 6-4, 6-4, 6-2, and then he beat Del Potro yesterday. Roger Federer has now made it to 19 consecutive Grand Slam semifinals. In that time, he has won 11 of those championships. He has been to 4 finals, lost in 4 finals, all to Rafael Nadal, 3 in the French, 1 in Wimbledon last year in what people call the greatest match ever played, arguably the greatest match ever played, and he's lost in 3 semifinals, twice in the Aussie Open to Novak Djokovic and Merit Safin, and once in the French Open to Rafael Nadal. He's lost to Nadal 4 straight years in the French Open, 1 semifinal, 3 straight finals. A stat here, though, with Roger Federer, this run he's on, 19 straight semifinals. Nobody's ever done that before. He's won 11, and as I said, he's lost in 4 finals there, and then 3 semifinals. So we'll see what happens in this tournament. those three guys who beat him in the semifinals, every one of them has won the tournament. And obviously, you lose in the final, your opponent wins in the final. So Federer's won 11. And everybody who's beat him in either the final or the semifinals in these other ones has eventually won the tournament. So shows you the domination Roger Federer has had. And Federer coming into this tournament, you know, watching him play Berdych, it looked like he was done. Down 2-0, of course. He seemed to fall off a bit last year. Losing in the semis to Djokovic, losing in the finals of the French to Nadal and Wimbledon, and then winning the U.S. Open to finish off the year, but he just wasn't the same player in the other tournaments. He was battling, I think, mono or a throat infection last year, and here he was playing Thomas Berdych down 2-0 and in the round of 16, and it was looking like Roger Federer. I mean, the big questions were going to be asked if he did lose that match or if he doesn't make it to the final of the U.S. Open this year. And then what does he do? He comes back, beats Berdych, then he destroys Del Porto yesterday. He lost three games yesterday in his three-set win. And now, hey, we get a watch. Is Roger back? For Rafael Nadal, who still has to go through the quarters tonight and then, you know, has to beat the winner of Tsonga Verdasco in the semis if he gets there, this is a guy where if he wins this tournament, he's now got four French Open titles, a Wimbledon title, and now a French Australian Open title to boot with that. And that'll also give him three championships in the last four majors that he's played, of the last four majors that occurred. So it'll definitely be a changing of the guard. It's completely official if Nadal can win this tournament. And that'll give him six majors in his career. And I believe he's only something like 22 years old, where Federer's already 27. So, you know, Federer's got the 13 majors, Nadal's got the six. So we'll see what happens there. Federer, though, he's got a very interesting semifinal matchup. Andy Roddick with one of the biggest wins of his career last night versus Novak Djokovic. They were playing in, I believe, 60 degrees Celsius. I think it even got more than 60 degrees Celsius. I'm not joking. I don't know if you saw that. Djokovic finally had to retire. He wasn't feeling good, and Roddick was doing great. Roddick's lost 15 pounds. He's apparently in terrific shape. And, you know, this is a Roddick who, in the past, who he has won a U.S. Open. I believe back in 2003 was the year he did it. But Roddick in the past has been sort of, he'll do tournaments where he'll blaze through the competition, and then he'll play one of these top players and get beat pretty good. Well, he beat Djokovic yesterday, but big task for him tomorrow playing Roger Federer, so we'll see how that one goes. Women's side of the draw, we've got a quarterfinal matchup going on right now. Suarez Navarro taking on Elena Dementieva. If Dementieva wins and Elena Kuznetsova beats Serena Williams, which would be an upset in itself, tonight, you're going to have four Russian women in the semifinals. So that's sort of to watch there. I mean, the women's, it's just not as good right now, but the men are playing some quite fantastic tennis, and there's some very intriguing matchups right now. So I'm watching the Australian Open. Don't know if you are, but there's going to be some fun stuff. Serena Williams, if she wins this, I believe that'll give her 10 major championships in her career, putting her, I think it's all alone in eighth place all time. So that's what Serena's trying to do. She's the only woman left with more than one major, and the only other one who's had a major victory is her opponent tonight, Elena Kuznetsova. Svetlana Kuznetsova. Svetlana. So we'll see how that one turns out. Anyways, folks, we're going to take a quick little break here on Wiener's Barbecue on 101.9 FM CITR Radio. When we're back, it's going to be Howard Samura of the Vancouver Province. We're going to be talking a lot of Canada West basketball right now. SFU, UBC, UVic, and Trinity Western all having very fine seasons in the men's side of the draw. And the women's, it's SFU. Victoria's doing pretty good. UBC looking like they're going to have a third-place finish. Basically, as it's set right now, in both the men's and the women's side, they're going to be the four teams to make the playoffs. Every one of them is going to be hosting a different series, and they're all going to be facing different opponents. If that made sense, good for you for understanding, and I'll explain it more when Howard comes on the show. All right, folks, we're going to take a quick break. You're listening to 101.9 FM CITR Radio, Vancouver, Canada. Okay, everybody, welcome back to the show. With us on the line right now, he's on his way up the hill at SFU. That's where we're going?
Yeah, up the hill, Daryl, halfway up Burnaby Mountain. I hope I don't lose you because the cell reception is bad up here.
There you go. Well, we'll see what we can do. Howard Samura of the Vancouver Province with us right now. And, Howard, we're here to talk a little Canada West basketball, men's and women's variety. But, Howard, I got to start off with the men's. How impressed are you with the Canada West Pacific Division this year? SFU's gotten better. Victoria, they've kind of maintained where they were in the past. UBC's maintained, but they were already at such a high level. And Trinity Western, though, Howard, that's the team we got to talk about. 14-5 on the season, but they are winners of 12 straight games. This is a red-hot Trinity Western team, Howard, and they beat Calgary in Calgary last year without Jacob Dirksen, who's missed the last 2 weeks with a sprained ankle. How impressed are you with this Trinity Western Spartans team right now?
Just really impressed. I mean, I think right now they're the story of the Canada West right now in terms of men's basketball, because you look at, as you mentioned, Daryl, Jacob Dirksen, who is second, you know, in the conference in scoring, I believe, or third by like a tenth of a point, and also the leading rebounder. It's been an amazing, weekend for the Spartans that they went in there without that guy who means so much to their offense, and they were still able, you know, to win a close game, a game that, you know, really was never really decided in terms of the flow of the game, you know, until the later stages of the contest. So this is a team that just believes in itself overall. I talked to Brian Bannerman briefly, you know, their fifth-year guard, and he says it's the most talented group he's been with. So you love the fact that Scott Allen had some great ideas in terms of running a team that he brought from White Rock Christian, the high school. He stepped right into the Canada West level with those ideas. Everyone's bought in, and really, you know, they've created a bit of a dynamo here in Langley, because this is a team that, as our listeners will know, beat UBC when the Thunderbirds were ranked number 2, and also earlier this year took them to overtime.
Yeah, and Howard, break it down sort of. We've got a couple weeks to go before the playoffs start, so we're getting into the nitty-gritty right now. Start with the team, though, you're talking about right now. You're on your way to interview one of their players, Greg Wallace of the SFU Clan. SFU will be playing Trinity Western in a couple games this weekend. Trinity in a dogfight with Victoria to host a first-round playoff series. They're going to be playing each other. But SFU, is this a team you think, I mean, it looks like they are going to be playing UBC in the first round. Does SFU have a chance in that series?
Yeah, you know what? SFU really, I think, has gotten a bit of an identity the last couple of years. I mean, you'll remember, I think it was last year that they actually won a game at War Gym, and I think that was pretty big based on the fact that Greg Wallace, you know, was their go-to guy. Everybody kind of knew that he was going to be the focal point of the offense, and Simon Fraser still found a way to win. So I think the big key with Simon Fraser this year is Scott Clark has developed a bench, and he's bringing in, you know, the strongest rotational group of guys he's had probably in, you know, 3 years, ever since Aaron Christensen, you know, left the program. And, you know, you look at the fact that they have struggled a bit over the last couple of weeks because Sean Burke, their point guard, who's having a great season, you know, his best as a Clan player, you know, has been injured and wasn't available to them last week when they lost big in Calgary and, you know, squeaked by Lethbridge with a fourth quarter comeback. So, you know, when Burke's with that group, I think everybody plays better. And there's been a forward from Surrey, Cortland Park, named Eric Burrell, you know, I think who's really starting to come into his own as an inside scorer and just a guy that can give them some rebounding and toughness. So the whole group is kind of melded around those guys. And, of course, Matt Kuzminski, you know, the transfer from UVic, who's really found a place here at Simon Fraser. So they've got some great players in their lineup. You know, unfortunately, you're doing it in a conference where you've got traditionally one of the best defensive teams in the country in Victoria, the deepest team, you know, in UBC, and the hottest team in Trinity Western. That's a trio of teams that's pretty hard to make headway against, but I think Simon Fraser is hanging in there, and really all they have to do right now is hang in there. I think their wins over Fraser Valley a couple of weeks ago, Daryl, enough to kind of give them the space they need to maintain for that fourth and final playoff spot.
But you'd actually, in that first-round playoff series, which it pretty much will be set after this weekend, you think they could actually beat UBC in a three-game series?
No, I think that would be awfully tough. I think when you're Simon Fraser, though, I don't think anyone is going to be easy to play in that first round. And obviously, you know, UBC is a juggernaut. You look at what they're able to do to just about anybody, especially with home court advantage at War Gym. I mean, that's a really tough task to have to go in there and try and, you know, make a statement against the UBC team that is so, so very strong, Daryl. But what I'm saying is, I think right now, you know, the way Victoria is playing defensively and the way that Trinity Western has gotten on a roll, I don't think Simon Fraser is going to have any kind of easy task in the opening round of the playoffs. They just have to try and be playing as best as they can as they head into the postseason and just see where the chips fall.
And Trinity Western will be playing Victoria. That's going to be the matchup in the first round. We don't know where it's going to be. Probably will be in Trinity Western. They've got two big games versus SFU this weekend. That's how that matchup shaping up hard. It's not for a couple weeks, but that's going to be a fun first round series, hey?
Oh, it most certainly is. And, you know, it's going to be a team that, you know, can score the basketball in Trinity Western, and a team, as we've mentioned so much already in the show, Victoria, that, you know, has really made its name on being a defensive team and slowing people down, slowing the flow of the play. But you'll notice Victoria's been topping that 80-point plateau, you know, the last few games. You know, Mitch Gudge and Tyler Haas, I think that veteran duo for the Vikes is really starting to score the ball as well as they have in their Victoria careers. So I think that's that one is a real tough one to predict in terms of how things work. You got to love the fact that Craig Bocamp, the coach at Victoria, really knows, you know, how to win in the playoffs. And Scott Allen is going into the playoffs with Trinity the first time. We've seen Bocamp take his team right to the CIS final, and only a dynasty of a Carlton team was able to hold them back from winning a national title just a few years ago. So, you know, this is a Victoria team that, you know, you have to say is playoff tested. They know what it's all about. And, you know, it should be a great first-round matchup if indeed it is Trinity and Victoria. And I know Trinity Western will tell you, Daryl, you know, having that tiebreaker, that edge against the Vikes right now is huge as you head down the stretch drive.
Well, where I got to say Craig Bocamp, give him a ton of credit, is I think UBC's best player, Howard, in the last month has been their point guard, Josh White. Jacob Dirksen, obviously the best player in the whole conference. Those guys were both on Victoria 2 years ago.
Yeah, I know. And when you think of what Craig Bocamp did starting over when both of those players left, and, you know, I think at one point when last season started at Victoria, he had, I believe it was one or either no starters from, you know, the previous year. You know, Gutchen and Haas have worked their way into the starting group with Victoria. So this is a Victoria team that really has rebuilt itself on the fly. I think systematic play is what keeps Victoria on top. And Bocamp brings in players that fit that system. We're talking about Ryan McKinnon, the guard who, you know, is only in his second year, but is really showing signs of becoming, you know, a Trumpy Brandon Ellis type of a guy offensively. And of course, everybody buys in with the defense. So, you know what? They could have hung their heads after losing such great players as White and Dirksen, but they've soldiered on and continue to remain one of the top teams in not just the division, but in the conference.
And Howard, where's so great following that Trinity Western Victoria series is whoever wins it, even if, and UBC beats SFU in the Canada West Pacific Division final playoffs, even if you lose that series, you're going to be the wild card in the Canada West Final Four. So suddenly you find yourself in that Canada West Final Four semifinal game. The winner goes to Nationals. That Trinity Western Victoria series, they're going to be playing for, that's a huge series because one of those teams is going to be one win away from going to the Nationals.
Yeah, I agree. And when you think about it, you know, when Scott Allen was bringing in all the new players, we're talking about Lewis Hurd, the guard he brought in from the Columbia Bible College and the BC Colleges, you know, Jacob Dirksen, you know, bringing in players of real high quality, you know, into his program, you know, you started to look at what the Trinity record was last year, Daryl, 9-14, and you started thinking, you know, could they, you know, reverse that and be 19-4? Well, they've got the five losses already, but I think this is a team that it could come as close as possible to reversing their record from last year. And in a division as competitive as the Pacific Division, boy, that's not an easy thing to do.
And, okay, Howard, so the playoffs are going to start in 2 weeks. I definitely want to have you on before the playoffs get underway for...
I'll tell you, Joe, in a couple of weeks we'll have our annual Howie Awards where I pick the best of men's and women's Pacific Division basketball. So if you have me on at that point, I'd love to talk about, you know, the Pacific Division regular season past and take another look at the playoffs because this year promises to be a really fun year, I think, in the opening round in both the men's and women's matchups.
Howard, the quick question, where's the Canada West Final Four played, and what two teams from the Pacific Division are in it?
Where is it going to be played and which are the final two teams? Well, you know what, I, with all due respect to Victoria, and I think that's going to be a dogfight down the stretch, you know, I really think Trinity Western, if they can keep on this role and if they can maintain their chemistry when Dirksen gets back in the lineup, just based on the fact that they own the season series against Victoria, you know, and have such a nice winning streak, you know, combined, I think Trinity, you know, Trinity Western and UBC look like the top two teams, you know, in this division right now. And we'll see how that all shakes down.
Awesome. And Howard, on the women's side, SFU, the dominant team by far, 18-1. UBC playing much better in the new year. They're 10-9. Most likely will pass Trinity Western, finish third in the playoffs. It'll be Victoria in second place, it looks like. Trinity Western looking like they're going to be playing SFU. Your thoughts of Canada West women's Pacific Division basketball?
Well, I think the key with UBC, and they are the hot team right now in the division, Deb Huben's done a great job rallying from that real slow start. And you look at what they've been able to do, I think the key test here for Deb Huben's team is how much momentum does the UBC women's team have when they enter the playoffs. They want to be where they are right now when the playoffs start, because they all believe in each other right now. You look at what they were able to do over the weekend, and I think, you know, the way Leanne Evans has stepped it up the last couple of games, you know, add that to the fact that Zara Huntley has slowly built, you know, over the course of this, you know, latest surge into a dependable go-to player who can do all the tough little things that you need in a game. And Leah St. Pierre, also the rookie. It's taken the rookies and the young players, you know, kind of half a season to get involved in what's happening in terms of determining the fortunes of their team. I think they're doing that now, and that's why I think UBC is an especially dangerous team, and I think one that a really hot and very capable Victoria team has to watch out for. So as much as we kind of wrote UBC off at the start of the season, I think the women enter the playoffs, you know, as a team that you have to worry about, and the fact that, you know, their last loss to SFU was by 9 points.
It's kind of interesting, Howard, that SFU, Victoria, looks like going to be hosting first round for the women. Looks like it's going to be Trinity Western and UBC for the men. So out of the four schools, they're all going to be hosting one series, and they're all going to be playing each other, but in different matchups. It's quite interesting. That's how it worked out.
If form does hold, as you say, Daryl, it's going to be tough. I wish, you know, I love to see those double headers because you get to see more games. But
you won't get a single one, Howard.
You won't just have to pick and choose. Yeah.
Howard, some more of the Vancouver Province. Howard, thanks so much for doing this. So 2 weeks we're doing the Howies on this show.
We'll do the Howies.
Awesome. Howard, some more. Howard, thanks a bundle.
Okay. Thanks so much, Daryl.
All right, everybody, Howard Samura of the Vancouver Province. Okay, we're going to take a break. When we're back, we're going to be going a little mainstream sports. We're going to be talking a little Super Bowl. Brian Bass from Nevada, Las Vegas will be with us. You're listening to Winners Barbecue, 101.9 FM, CITR Radio, Vancouver, Canada.
Outside, as if waiting for a knock. Everything I need in front of me. So
Everybody, welcome back to Wiener's Barbecue here on 101.9 FM. With us on the line from, it snowed here last night again, you know.
Oh, really?
Yeah, real pissed off. Although by the time I got out of my apartment this morning, the snow was pretty much gone. But that's just lazy old me. Nonetheless, it snowed here last night. What's the weather like over there? However, before you say it, it was, I believe, during the Andy Roddick Novak Djokovic Australian Open match yesterday. It was, I believe, 61 or 62 Celsius on the court. So, is it as hot as that?
Yeah. Listen, it was a beautiful day in Vegas today. It was, you know, 70 degrees. We're doing well down here.
Yeah, you're hanging. You're comfortable, shorts and t-shirt and.
Not shorts yet, but we're getting there. We're getting there.
We had snow. We had snow. It was rather disappointing. With us on the line, BJ. BJ, before we get into the Super Bowl, I didn't watch 1 second. Did you watch any of the NHL All-Star game? Any at all on the weekend?
I did, actually, yeah.
How was it? Tell me.
I don't know. It was okay. I watched some of the skills competition and watched some of the All-Star game itself. And, it's an All-Star game. I mean, what are they going to do? I mean, not a lot of hard skating out there. I mean, it's an All-Star game, you know? I mean, it is what it is. I don't think anyone's tuning in to really watch, you know, some great hockey being played.
How, you know, baseball, they've created a game now. With the winner gets home ice, home field advantage in the World Series. That's a good All-Star game. That All-Star game is almost worth watching. These other ones are exhibitions fest. I'm sorry. On this one, I know you always diss baseball, but baseball's got it right on this one.
Unless there's a tie.
This is how...
Darryl, I'll tell you what I actually did like about the All-Star game. They changed, I believe they changed the format of the breakaway competition or the shootout competition. And it seems like they're really trying to make it a lot more like the slam dunk contest. And obviously, you know, it being the feature event, of that day's festivities. And obviously with the kind of talent you have in there, obviously Ovechkin, really probably being the premier guy, you know, they're giving these guys, kind of an allotment of time to do as much crazy stuff as they can do as possible. It was kind of cool. And then actually they let the crowd vote on it, crowd and text messaging. I thought it was very interesting. I mean, it was the only difference that I noticed from years past.
What I'd like to see in that kind of format, BJ, I think somebody should do, Cedric Ceballos did it in the NBA slam dunk competition. He blindfolded himself. I'd like to see that done.
Well, and Ovechkin actually brought out props, and they had brought up the fact that you weren't supposed to use props, and no one really seemed to care. But he brought out, you know, like a fishing hat with a Canadian flag in it, and some sunglasses, and pretended like he was a tourist. And I mean, they're getting there. I think that's what they're going to with that competition. And I thought it was interesting. I thought it was well done.
Did anybody do the Spud Webb? They took the puck, bounced it on the ice, and tried to hit it when it hopped.
You did have Alex Kovalev flip the puck up off of his head, and he also did a move where he caught it on like the back of his neck.
Oh,
so I mean, these guys are out there. You know, these guys are pushing the lines a little bit. It was well done. And listen, the best part, the highlight of it, was hearing Gary Bettman get booed in yet another NHL building.
And are we looking at Dominique Wilkins perhaps taking part in this competition?
Yes, I hear he's a front runner for next year's breakaway competition, Darryl.
Remember the Dominique Jordan slam dunk competition?
They don't call him the human highlight reel for nothing.
Attaboy. Before we get into the game that's taking place this weekend, did you see any of the Oscar-nominated movies? Have you seen anything?
Yeah, I'm actually really pissed, to be honest with you. It's not often I actually get pissed about Oscars.
He's angry.
I never even really watch it, but I got to tell you, Darryl, I don't know if you've seen this movie Gran Torino.
Dude, this is what I got to say. Gran Torino and The Wrestler were the two best movies I've seen this year.
I mean, Gran Torino was such a phenomenal movie.
Yeah,
and when
I'm
you
with
look
you.
At, you know, especially with Clint Eastwood, and, you know, he wrote it, he directed it, he sang the title song on the soundtrack, and then acted in it. I thought that was a real slap in the face for Clint Eastwood. I thought that that was possibly, you know, one of his greatest pieces of work that he's done in his long career, and probably the best movie he's done since Unforgiven, which won a whole bunch of Oscars, you know, in the 90s. I thought that was a real slap in the face to Clint Eastwood.
Yeah, you know what? Me, I'm with you. I liked it better than Million Dollar Baby. I liked it better than... It was a different kind of movie. That what was that? Flags of Our Fathers or whatever, that one. Remember?
Yeah, you had the combo, yeah, the Flags of Our Fathers and Sands of Iwo Jima.
But that was sort of playing off of a war movie, you know, a great movie, but a war movie. This is just a story he created that was pretty cool, and it's killing at the box office. Like, people like it. And I don't know. I'm with you. I'm with you on that one. Absolutely.
Yeah, you know, Daryl, I think, you know, obviously it takes, you know, some time, and the Oscars need to come and go, and whoever they you know, give that trophy to or those trophies to. But I think this will go down as, you know, Gran Torino is the year the Academy really messed up, or I should say the movie they really messed up on this year. You know, I really love Dark Knight. I thought Dark Knight could have been a Best Picture nominee. I thought it was that good. I thought it was that well shot. But, you know, it's understandable it didn't get in. Obviously, Heath Ledger's a shoe-in to win the supporting actor. But, yeah, Gran Torino, man. You know,
yeah,
really, that
you.
Movie really surprised me, Daryl. And I'm not going to ruin anything, but, you know, how it builds up and Clint Eastwood is the grumpiest old man. And then just how it ends, man. I mean, that was a phenomenal piece of filmmaking. And for Clint Eastwood to get the shaft, I thought that was a load of garbage.
Cool car, though, hey?
The Gran Torino, of course.
Cool car. Yeah, no, I thought Milk was really good, the Sean Penn one. I could see how that Slumdog Millionaire is nominated. And I don't think Benjamin Button and I'd put The Wrestler and Gran Torino in two of Benjamin Button, The Reader. I saw that one. That's okay, whatever. And then that Frost Nixon, that was really good. But I read a lot of it as fiction, so it kind of took away from the historical context of it. So Gran Torino and The Wrestler definitely should have been in there. Have you seen The Wrestler yet?
I have not.
It's amazing. But I think I'm sort of in the demographic that would absolutely adore that movie. So the 1980s hardcore wrestling fan, you know, I'm sort of...
When I see the commercials of that, I think of, you know, that movie that Jake the Snake Roberts made a couple years back?
Beyond the Mat,
called, like,
dude.
Body Slam,
dude,
or something like
Beyond
that.
Beyond the Mat.
Body Slam.
Beyond, BJ, Beyond the Mat.
Beyond the Mat, yeah.
Yeah.
You know, when I see the commercials for that, that's what I think of. I think of that Jake the Snake,
oh, yeah, man.
You know, wrestling in front of, you know, 300 people.
Oh, yeah, man.
And he's like 60 years old.
Well, dude, you're talking to my buddy and I 10 years ago went to New Westminster to see the Honky Tonk Man wrestle. So
you interviewed him, didn't you?
What's up? I interviewed the Honky Tonk Man. Absolutely. He didn't want me to do it, but I got him. I got him. I got him as he was walking to his Cadillac. It was actually quite insane. The other thing interesting for the Oscars is this is something you might tune in for. Is for the song Clint Eastwood wasn't nominated, and Bruce Springsteen in The Wrestler wrote a song which actually won the Golden Globe.
Right.
He wasn't. Bruce Springsteen original score, which won a Golden Globe, doesn't get nominated. I'm just saying.
Yeah, you know, but you know, that's always what they do. I mean, it always seems to me like they always get really pretentious with what, you know, with what they're selecting and what they don't select. And you know, I think that's kind of why, you know, you've seen Oscar ratings really dropping in the last couple of years, and I don't think that this year is going to be any different.
Well, we'll see. I'll watch because I'll have nothing better to do. But
and Daryl, you're right. I mean, that Clint Eastwood song, it comes
pretty,
on and he starts singing, and you're like, what am I listening to? And then, like, a minute later, you're like, wait a second, I kind of dig this. I kind of like this track.
Dude,
and I remember when that song came on, I literally turned to the person that I watched the movie with, and I said, best picture, best director, best screenplay, best actor, and best song. And, you know, I mean, for it to get shafted in almost all of those categories, I mean, wow.
I don't think it got a nomination in anything.
In nothing. I mean,
that's
incredible. And, you know, listen, I mean, maybe some of that falls back on the studio of it got released so late and so close to, you know, when they make their selections you know, you're looking at one of those. It's kind of like in college football. It's better to lose earlier in the season, you know, or college basketball. You lose early, you get it out of the way. Kind of seems like Gran Torino might have lost of not having a little bit of that lead time and a little bit of that press, you know, leading up to the selection process. You know, obviously, like Slumdog Millionaire had, getting all the press and then now getting all the nominations. So you may be a mistake, on the studio's part there.
Two more on. Did you see Slumdog Millionaire?
Have not.
Okay. It's good, but the credits I thought was one of the worst things I've ever seen in a movie.
That's what I've heard, actually.
Oh, you've heard that? They did like a Bollywood dance routine. It was awful. Apparently, that's what they do, but I hated it. Robert Downey Jr., though, that was cool. I liked seeing him nominated for his Tropic Thunder role.
Yeah, it was a good role. I mean, I didn't really think it was, that, like, groundbreaking. It's so funny. I mean, he's in blackface, for the majority of the movie. And, I don't think that's something that a white actor could have got away with even, two or three years ago, let alone five or ten. So it's something that we've never really seen, at least, not in modern times. And I guess, that hook is why he's getting the nomination. I mean, did you really think that role was, over and above hundreds of other performances that we've seen, throughout the year?
Well, I think it was pretty cool. And I think it's also cool because it's him who did it. It's like finding a way to nominate Robert Downey Jr. And, Iron Man, he was awesome in Iron Man. Can't get nominated for that. But he can get nominated for this one. I just think it's, I agree with you in that it's sort of a career nomination, sort of. Like, you take his path. He was amazing in Chaplin,
I was going to say, it almost seems like it's like the Bill Murray Lost in Translation nomination of, this guy's been such a huge part of movies in Hollywood over the last, decades, that when the guy does a serious movie for once, he's a shoo-in for the nomination, but then they never actually look at giving him the award for it. And I thought that year that Bill Murray was nominated that he, really had a great chance to win just based on that role in Lost in Translation. But, you're right. Those comedic guys, it seems like, anytime that they can nominate him for something, they try and get him in there. And listen, I mean, comedies never get love at the Oscars. Yeah. Never have and probably never will.
See The Wrestler before the award ceremony. That's all I got to say.
Okay, I will.
Just see
will.
If you got three. All right, you ready to talk football?
Yeah.
Here we go. Before we get into it, the first topic on this Super Bowl, and I brought it up to you last week. This is the stat I like. This is the one for me in this Super Bowl. Whichever team wins it, their quarterback, either Ben Roethlisberger or Kurt Warner, two quarterbacks that have had very successful NFL careers, but definitely not up there with the all-time great Super Bowl champions. Whoever wins it, all-time great quarterbacks, I mean, all-time great quarterbacks. Whoever wins it will have as many as Dan Marino, one less than Tom Brady, one more than Peyton Manning, and two more than Dan Marino. One of these quarterbacks, Ben Roethlisberger or Kurt Warner, will be one of the winningest Super Bowl quarterbacks in NFL history. Whoever wins this game on Sunday.
It's incredible.
I like that one. I like that stat. I mean, do you agree with me, though? These guys are, suddenly they're one Super Bowl championship away. I mean, Roethlisberger, he could end up with as many, if not more, than Brady by the time he retires. So,
well, yeah, obviously you're looking at two different quarterbacks at two completely different stages of their career. We talked last week about, how I felt that Kurt Warner, by getting the Cardinals to the Super Bowl, really cemented himself in Canton in the Football Hall of Fame. Listen, you're right with Roethlisberger. I mean, this guy is so young. If he wins, he has two Super Bowl trophies. He's up there, at least in Pittsburgh Steelers, right behind Terry Bradshaw.
Yeah.
As, greatest franchise quarterbacks. And obviously a lot of years left to play in a football town with an owner that will, spend money, or at least, there's an ownership change taking place. But, Mike Tomlin's there as coach. I mean, regardless of what happens in this game, you definitely figure that Roethlisberger has a great chance of making it back there at least one more time throughout his career.
And if Pittsburgh does win this game, where does this defense go in all-time great defenses in the National Football League, if Pittsburgh wins?
That's a great question. I mean, I don't know. I don't know. I mean, I think that they got so lucky with so many of those games throughout the season. Listen, that defense was tremendous. You know, was it better than the 2001 Ravens defense?
Yeah, no,
I certainly don't think so. Was it better than the 85 Bears defense? I don't think so. Was it better than, the Minnesota Vikings Purple People Eaters or the Pittsburgh Steel Curtain? I think that what those teams showed is, years of dominance together. And I think that this Pittsburgh defense is certainly on the track to put together a track record like that. But I don't know, Darryl. I don't think that it necessarily gets vaulted up there. This isn't a team that's been winning on their defense. This is a team that's been winning on team efforts and all around offense, defense, special teams, everybody contributing. When that year that the Ravens won the Super Bowl, it was their defense. The offense didn't even have to take the field. It was the defense scoring points. It was the defense, taking points off the board. It was the defense stopping the other. That was the defense leading that team. I don't think that this Pittsburgh defense necessarily does that. I think it's more of an all-around team.
And there was something, if you just find some NFL film stuff on that Chicago Bears defense, that's probably the coolest defense in the history of the National Football League, inventing the 4-6 defense, the blitz package that nobody had ever seen before. And that Ravens team, which we got to see, BJ, you're right. I agree with you. The Steelers team is a great defense, and you talk about it, but there was just something so intimidating, and you just hear about it, and just Ray Lewis, the way he was back then, there was something just special and just dominant about that Ravens defense.
Well, and they had playmakers at almost every single position on that field, even down to like Tony Siragusa, up on the line. This Pittsburgh defense, I think there's a couple players clearly that stand out. Palomalu, Ferrier, James Harrison, who undrafted free agent. It looks, like one of the top defensive players in the game. But I think, after those three guys, maybe a couple others here or there, you really have a drop-off where, Deshae Townsend on the corner isn't really scaring anybody. And that's why I think the biggest difference is you look at those teams. They were stacked. All 11 guys that were on the field could immediately go to any NFL team and start at the exact same position. I'd say there's probably a handful of guys, probably those three guys with Pittsburgh. And after that, there's guys that are good but not great.
Conversely, on the other side of the ball, if Arizona pulls off the upset and wins on Sunday, are they the worst team to ever win the Super Bowl?
Wow, that's a great question. I don't think so. I don't think so. Just because of, they have so much talent, on the offensive side of the ball, that with that much talent, you can never be considered the worst team of anything. I don't think so. I don't think so. I would even say, in recent history, the Tampa Bay team that won, at least on the offensive side of the ball. No offense. The Baltimore on there's the worst team. Wow, Darryl, I don't know. You sprung that one on me, but I would say no. Just because of Kurt Warner, you have a Super Bowl MVP at quarterback. An All-Pro with 10,000 yards rushing out of the backfield. You have two of the best wide receivers in the game. I think with that much talent, you can't be the worst at anything.
Yeah, I'm just sure if you actually broke it down, and we could do it next week if Arizona wins. We'll try to find a team worse than Arizona that's won a Super Bowl. Just, when you go through it, We'll see that.
Yeah, I like that. I like that.
We'll see. Obviously, the game Sunday on BJ. You have a 24-page prop booklet with you? Who put this bad boy out?
Las Vegas Hilton. Right. It's the mecca of sports wagering. These are the guys that essentially set the Vegas line. These are the guys, the only sports book that really does it the old school way. And these guys, 24 pages of prop bets here. And there is nothing that is not covered in this, with the exception of my favorite bet of the halftime show. I love betting on the halftime show.
You used to be able to bet on the halftime show?
No, but I love betting on it, with people that I'm watching the game with. And listen, Darryl, for any of your listeners, I'll take odds. I say that Springsteen comes out with Born in the USA, closes with Born to be Wild, and Glory Days is in the middle.
I think you're missing Born to Run, personally.
Oh, Born to Run, Born to Be Wild, Born to Run is what I, yes, yeah. I think he closed, I think he opens with Born in the USA and closes with Born to Run.
Okay, just to change it, I'll say he, just to be different, I mean, Born in the USA, Born in the USA has to be in there, okay? But I'm going to say he closes with Born to Run, just to be different, because you use Glory Days. But I'm going to say Hungry Heart is in the middle.
I thought you were going to go with Dancing in the Dark, Daryl.
Dancing in the Dark? I don't know. I don't know. You know what he had if they were in it, though? He had that one song, hey? Philadelphia. He had Philadelphia if the Eagles were in it. It's a bit of a downtrodden song. It's a bit of a slow song. I believe he got an Oscar for it, maybe, or I don't know. But he had Philadelphia if the Eagles had been able to beat Tampa Bay. But I will go. It's what came to my head, BJ. I will go Hungry Heart.
If I hear that song, I'm falling over.
There you go. Also in this game, BJ, just some of the bets, though. Some of the odds, just to sort of tell us the ridiculousness.
I got a good one here for you, Daryl. Yeah. You'll like this one. Who will have more? Steelers and Cardinals total sacks -0.5.
-0.5, okay.
Versus Ernie Els' fourth round birdies. And I believe the tournament is the Phoenix Open in Scottsdale.
I don't even understand that one. Okay, let's figure they're going to get, say, 6 sacks. I'd say under. I'm going to guess under.
You're going with the birdies.
Yeah, now, so an E, no, I'm
going
to go with the sacks.
Oh, you're going with the sacks.
I'm going with the sacks. I'm going to go out and say, because Eagles don't count as birdies, right?
As birdies, correct. They do not.
You heard it here first, B. It's going to be under. It's going to be, the sacks are going to win. What else we got? What else we got?
Who will have more? Mitch Berger, first punt, gross yards.
Gross yards.
-3.5.
-3.5, okay.
Versus Kevin Durant, points, rebounds, and assists.
Ooh, okay, I don't know enough about Kevin Durant, but I'm going to bet that the first punt, Pittsburgh's going to get the ball, they're going to march down the field, they're going to get to about the 45-yard line, and they're going to have to punt the ball away. Now, they're going to get close enough that it's not going to be a very big, gross punt, because he's going to sort of...
Yeah, no, listen, I agree with you. I actually think that's a great bet on Durant.
Who does Durant play for? Texas?
Oklahoma City. Oh. Or sorry, no. I rephrase that. He plays for the Seattle Sonics.
He's the kid that went to Texas? Is that the one? Or I don't know.
Yes, Kevin Durant from Texas. I believe rookie of the year last year.
Okay, so I'm going with sacks over Ernie Els and Kevin Durant over the gross punt. What else we got?
Santonio Holmes receptions.
Receptions. So this
-1.5.
-1.5?
No, just a half.
Okay, so we're looking at like 4 or 5 here. Yeah.
Versus Tayshaun Prince.
Tayshaun
made free throws.
So keep in mind,
like I said, this is why I love the Hilton. It's not a sports book. It's the super book.
Okay. So this is one that you could easily be looking at like 3-2 wins it, right?
Yeah.
I am going to go with, I'll go with Tayshaun Prince.
I think that almost seems easy. I think that you got to go with Tayshaun Prince. You got to assume, 6 to 8 free throws made. I think that you get the tiebreaker. I think that's a good one too.
Okay, I'm going to
This is one that I really like, Daryl.
Yeah.
And our Canadian, or I should say our listeners will like as well. Yeah. Who will have more? Steelers and Cardinals, total punts.
Total punts.
Total punts.
Okay.
Versus, and then I'm going to say this and then I'll go back and explain it. Team Canada, total goals. And when I say Team Canada, the Hilton Superbook consists Team Canada of the Senators, the Oilers.
Oh, my.
And the Canadiens.
Oh, my. Really?
And you get plus a goal and a half.
I got to go with Team Canada, don't you? That's a fun bet.
That's a great one. I like Team Canada in that as well. The total there is a separate prop bet of total punts. That line is 9.5. You got to figure that the sports book is probably going to be right on with that one. With a goal and a half, I figure you can get 9 goals out of those 3 teams.
Dude, we're talking Team Canada here, Beej.
And it's listed as Team Canada.
Oh, okay, so I'm taking Team Canada over punts. And then I'm taking, what was the Ernie Els one? I thought there'd be more of the sacks. Sacks,
yes,
over,
you're running for birdies.
Sacks over Ernie Els. That's what I had.
Yes.
And then I have Tayshaun Prince over Santonio Holmes. And then, what was the other one? Oh, Kevin Durant over Burger's punts.
First Ben punt. Roethlisberger, touchdown passes.
Okay, so
versus Alexander Ovechkin, points scored.
Oh, that's a good one. I'd go Ovechkin.
You know, Darryl, I got to tell you too. You know, I mean, I'm just kind of reading these off. I haven't really looked at these ones yet. I mean, I think these are novelty bets at best. There's three pages of these, and I got to tell you, just going through the ones that we've gone through, they seem kind of obvious.
Yeah, I like Ovechkin, dude. Ovechkin.
They seem kind of easy. And listen, you're not getting odds on any of these. You're laying odds. It's a straight bet. You got to lay, you know, you're laying minus -110. But, and you can't parlay them. But I think there's some real exploitable numbers on here. You know, I wonder if maybe these guys didn't reach a little too far for the stars.
Okay, hold on here, B. I'm looking up Tayshaun Prince, okay? I'm looking him up here right now. So, Beach, onto the game itself, though. what's going to happen? Okay, Tayshaun Prince, before we move on here, his last game, BJ, 0 free throws made. 2 games before that, 1 free throw made.
Wow.
The game in between that, 10 for 10 at the line.
Wow.
So, Tayshaun's all over the board here.
Yeah, interesting. And I was going to say, I mean, I know he's a great free throw shooter from his days at Kentucky. It's interesting he doesn't get to the line as much. I wonder if he's banged up a little bit.
No, he's still scoring points. He's just not getting to the line. But that game in the middle, he got 10.
Very interesting.
But keep in mind, even if he does get 10, you can still get Santonio Holmes going off in the Super Bowl. So, from looking at this beach, so here it is. 0, 10, 1 made, 0 made, 2 made, 0 made, 0 made, 2 made, 0 made. Those are his last 9 games.
And obviously, I completely digress.
Beach, I'm taking Santonio Holmes.
All of a sudden, that looks like a pretty easy bet the other way.
Yeah,
huh?
Absolutely, absolutely. The game itself, though, BJ, Pittsburgh favorite in this one. I think Pittsburgh's going to win. I'll put it at an 11-point Steeler victory in this Super Bowl. Your thoughts?
Really? You think they cover the spread? No problem.
Yeah, I really like Pittsburgh, and I think Arizona's going to put up points, but I think Pittsburgh's eventually going to get some really big stops. And the way I see this thing developing is it's going to be tight early, but Pittsburgh will be in front. And then eventually Pittsburgh's defense will really step it up, and the Steelers are just going to pound them with the run, put up points slowly but surely, and win by about 11 points. That's my Super Bowl prediction. So,
you know, I think the line's a little high at 7. I think that's a little inflated for, you know, multiple reasons. Obviously, the book is going to get more bets on Pittsburgh than whoever else they're playing. It almost doesn't even matter.
Yeah.
I think there's also, you know, Some pretty significant doubting still going on the Cardinals. I think that line seems a little high. I think that I'm probably going to take the points. You know, I think that we're going to see some lead changes in this game. I think we're going to see a little bit of back and forth. I have a hard time laying a touchdown with Pittsburgh because, you know, I mean, listen, we could get into a game where, you know, Ben is having a hard time moving the ball. The Arizona defense is shutting down the Pittsburgh run, and then they're making Roethlisberger beat him in the air. And when teams do that, you know, we've seen Roethlisberger have problems with that in the past. And then, you know, just having to lay a touchdown on top of it. I mean, I think the Cardinals can win this game outright. Not that they're going to, but I think that they can. And that the fact that I'm going to get a touchdown on top makes it real hard for me to move off of the underdog, to be honest with you.
Well, and the thing that's I think might even be a little understated in this game is Hines Ward in a tough, hard-nosed football game is such a valuable player for the Pittsburgh Steelers. He's a guy I could see playing extremely well if hurt, but if Hines Ward does have to come out of this game, Pittsburgh's offense, that's a huge loss for them. So that's sort of the intangible we don't know about for this one.
Well, and on the flip side of that is, you know, what kind of role is Anquan Boldin going to have in the game? You know, is that hamstring healthy? Is he going to be able to play a significant role? I tend to think that he is. I think I'm going to actually be betting on quite a few Boldin prop bets, especially just, you know, he wasn't in the game last time, you know, driving down the field. He's yelling at the coach on the sideline. I look at Boldin getting involved in this game if healthy and having a very large role. But I agree with you 100%, Hines Ward. I mean, you know, he really exemplifies, you know, how Pittsburgh Steelers play football, you know, whether it be from the way he plays the game, the way he blocks downfield, you know, all the little things that he does on the field. I agree with you. If he's not in the game, they're going to have some big, big problems, because then, you know, you're able to double-team Santonio Holmes, and you're telling, what, Nate Washington and Heath Miller, okay, beat us? I mean, I don't think there's anybody on the planet that thinks that, you know, Linus Sweet is going to be a game-breaker in the Super Bowl. So you're right. I mean, if Ward is out, you look at the double-team shifting over to Santonio Holmes, working on really shutting him down, and all of a sudden, who's Ben going to? I mean, who are his targets? I agree with you. I mean, he's a huge part. He's a huge part of that team.
Didn't Linus Sweet drop a pretty much guaranteed touchdown against Baltimore? Didn't I see that?
Yes.
Yeah. The other one is with the Pittsburgh Steelers, though, in this game, very tough, hard-nosed defense. And this is going to be a question in this one, Beej. You know, this is a great Steeler defense. They have a great secondary. And Philadelphia, until that last drive, really took it to Arizona in the second half of that game. And let's face it, you look at the teams Arizona's beaten in these playoffs. Atlanta, good defense. All good defenses. Carolina, good defense. Philadelphia, good defense. But they haven't played a team like the Steelers yet, not even close. So let's see how this team matches up against a truly, you know, mate, we said it, not the great defense of all time, but maybe just right below those teams, though. That's going to be a big question for this one.
Yeah, no, I agree. And again, you know, it goes back to Boldin. And, you know, if they're able to, you know, spread this defense across the field with Boldin, Fitzgerald, and Breston, you know, once you're able to do that, once you stretch that defense like that, you know, you are able to limit their effectiveness so much more. Now, when in that game against Philadelphia, you know, it was the most bizarre thing to me is Arizona, for essentially the first time all year, really abandoned the wide receiver spread set. And, you know, if you remember in the fourth quarter, they were playing one receiver wide in pretty much the entire fourth quarter. Obviously, it worked out. Obviously, they drove down the field, and obviously, they scored a touchdown. But, you know, at this point in the season, you don't really want to be changing things too much. You don't really want to be tinkering with the formula that got you there. And, you know, I mean, I think that they need to spread that field out as much as possible, you know, make Palomalu over-pursue, try and find some openings in the secondary or some soft spots in the secondary, and they have the receivers and the quarterback to exploit it. You know, the biggest question, I think, is can the Arizona, you know, what happens for the offensive lines on both sides? Can their Arizona offensive line keep this tremendous Steelers defense off of Kurt Warner? If there's one thing we know about Kurt Warner, is he doesn't perform well under pressure. He doesn't throw the ball well with a hand in his face, and he's not good at, you know, getting out of the pocket, obviously, but really moving the ball when there's pressure. You know, so can the Arizona Cardinals offensive line, you know, at least give him some time back there? And then on the flip side, you know, we talked about it a little bit last week, Pittsburgh Steelers offensive line is playing their best football of the season. You know, some guys that really weren't performing well earlier in the season are now playing well. But, you know, the Arizona defense has been playing jacked up. Clancy Pendergrass, the defensive coordinator, has been calling more blitzes than ever. You know, we're seeing a guy, Adrian Wilson, in the secondary for Arizona, you know, probably really getting some media coverage and focus now that he probably should have been getting all along, or, you know, would have been getting if he didn't play in Arizona. But, you know, with Adrian Wilson, you have a guy just like Palomalu or just like Ed Reed, a dynamic playmaker that is all over the field. And you never know if he's going to be, you know, deep coverage or if he's bringing the blitz. And so, you know, will the Pittsburgh offensive line be able to hold up the way that they have the last couple weeks? I think that's literally where the game is decided, is on the offensive line.
Awesome. BJ Bass, Nevada, Las Vegas. BJ, thanks for doing this. As always, we'll talk next week.
Thanks, Daryl. Bye.
Okay, everybody. That's it for Wiz Barbecue on 101.9. Mike with Fletcher Head coming up in a moment.
someone new, someone who deserves you. You're not the one for me. Ooh, can't say you're not the one. You're not the one for me. Oh, 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 oh.